The Bob Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.
The Bob Siegel Show is brought to you in part by Primetime Media Group and the law offices of Matthew Simone.
Recurring themes on The Bob Siegel Show can also be found on his online column, Forbidden Table Talk.
It's time now for the Bob Siegel Show, a religious open forum where all questions are welcome. And now, here's your host, Christian apologist, Bob Siegel.
And this is Bob Siegel. So, you'd like to believe in God, but you wonder how God feels about all of the latest fads and new rules from the progressive left. For example, what is God's view of cultural appropriation? You know what I mean, cultural appropriation, borrowing some custom or apparel or hairstyle from a race that isn't your own. Is this the new racism? Does God agree that this is wrong? Well, my friend, since God gave us brains, my guess is that he wants us to actually use them, even though so few people do. And so his view of this so-called cultural appropriation would be identical to the view that anyone choosing to use their brains would have. Translation, he thinks it's a bunch of hooey. I guess I should be careful. Well, hooey just means nonsense. I am not aware of what nationality created the word. I suppose I may be guilty right now of cultural appropriation. We need to figure out how all this works. God forbid we should end up offending anybody. Even though, as I just said, the God who does forbid other things doesn't actually forbid this. So, let me ask you a question. If I choose to learn a foreign language, is that also cultural appropriation? If I like to eat Chinese food, is that cultural appropriation? Just watch. Such choices are not much different than what we're already hearing. They're not much different than people telling someone how to wear their hair or what kinds of dresses can be worn to the school prom. Who makes up these idiotic rules? And why do so many people roll over and play dead instead of calling out this self-righteous claptrap designed to divide rather than unite? Oh, before I go on, let me try this question out for size. Is sneaking into a country illegally considered cultural appropriation? It'll be a cold day in hell before that one gets put on the PC list. And now let me introduce a man whose name will never be put on a PC list. In fact, if anyone ever tried to invoke his help in the politically correct cause, he'd probably accuse them of cultural appropriation. Say hello to Jim Barrier.
Hey, Bob. And, you know, I had a comment about that when you had posted that. And my concept about cultural appropriation is, the scripture says the word became flesh and dwelt among us, and in Christ the fullness of the Godhead dwells bodily. So was Jesus guilty of cultural appropriation.
Yeah, well, according to the lamestream media, I guess he would be.
But, you know, this is one of the dumbest things that's come along for a while. There's been a lot of dumb stuff.
Well, and you never think it could get dumber, but then it does.
I never say that, because, you know, I've quoted this line several times, that the two most common things in the universe are hydrogen and stupidity.
Well, and you and I have talked about this over the air, how this is going to put the Onion out of business, because they can't make up satirical news stories that are funnier than the ones that we actually have.
The real ones, yeah. Speaking of which, before we get into the meat of our program tonight, I stumbled across this headline. I couldn't believe it. I'm going to read it to you word for word as I saw in the news, and it says, women on inflatable rainbow unicorn rescued from Minnesota Lake. You can't make this stuff up.
Yeah, that sounds like something that belongs in a college campus comfort room, not a lake.
Oh, my gosh. And then the story went on to talk about how there were some weeds involved or something. I don't know.
Oh, did they mention that they were drowning because of something Donald Trump did?
It was Trump's fault, no doubt.
Yeah, of course.
Of course. Now, here's another thing. Now, I've told you, I hate reading the news or watching the news because I get so mad sometimes. But so I see this one now. A restaurant right here in Texas, in Houston, Texas, made the mistake of serving lunch to Jeff Sessions.
Oh, what's that? I saw that on the news. I didn't realize that was in Houston.
Yeah, Houston. And they were inundated with complaints, death threats, and that this restaurant should not serve lunch to a man that they don't agree with.
Now, was Houston the place you were comparing to California, or was that Austin?
Austin is
but
really
now Houston's maybe going off the deep end too.
Well, there's a lot of that element down there. But I'm just thinking, okay, now help me out here, folks. If a baker says that they don't want to bake a cake because they don't agree with the client who's walking to their doors, and they get run out of business and sued, on the other hand, a restaurant absolutely has an obligation to not serve somebody that some of their other clients don't agree with. I'm confused.
Well,
Bob,
don't be confused, Jim. It's actually very simple. The left does not have to be consistent. The left does not have to explain itself. That's
they
it.
Just make rules for the rest
that's
of us.
That's it. Being a liberal means you never have to say you're sorry.
Okay, well, sorry, not sorry. Okay, well, thanks for having me on the show, Bob. You know, I always look forward to it. And just before we get started, I want to say hi from Gary Young.
Oh, great. Is he visiting you again?
We talk all the time. We communicate very, very frequently. We have stayed in touch. He's one of the closest people in my life, as you know. And so, but he said hi, and he's doing very well. Though for him, he's up in Indiana. He said school has already started, and I thought that's terrible.
Well, you know, my wife is a school principal. The kids came back last Thursday.
She's been out there
the last 2 weeks. So. I know it's crazy. You don't really have the summer vacation anymore. But but say hi to Gary too, and tell him it was great having him on the show a couple of months
Will
ago.
Will do. Now we talked about. I presented the concept. I'd like to do a little brief history because in just a little over 2 weeks it will be the 50th anniversary of my conversion, becoming a believer in Jesus Christ, and that happened in August of 1968. And so I'm just kind of all month long, I'm celebrating this in various ways.
Oh, yeah. The day you became born again is as important, if not more important, than your physical birthday.
Well, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of like Christmas without Easter.
So
somebody will get that. So I wanted to just, as a backdrop, kind of tell my story. And, you know, the Apostle Paul did this all the time. He was always giving his testimony. And so it's an effective way to get a message across. But I would like to do that with along with a parallel thing of just kind of observations over the last 50 years of our culture, particularly the church, and what has happened during this half century since I've been following Jesus Christ. And I use that terminology now because for many people, if I say Christian, they immediately think of a political right-wing thing that I don't always necessarily embrace. So I have been saying for several years now, I call myself a follower of Jesus.
And that's a much more accurate way to put it.
It's a little more specific. And the truth is, that's what Jesus said when he went around finding people. He said, follow me, follow me, follow me. And he didn't say, bow your head, close your eyes, raise your hand, repeat after me. He said, follow me. And so just took a pot shot. Now I just offended all the Baptist preachers. I'm sorry.
Well, not me. I'm actually an ordained Baptist. But
I know you are.
Well, and an ordained Wesleyan. I'm kind of becoming a United Nations Christian.
Yeah,
here.
You know, you're an anomaly.
Or United Denominations, I should say.
For years, you were a registered Democrat. So, you know.
Yeah, and I never once voted Democrat during any of that time.
Well,
now I'm a registered independent.
Yeah, I think you've always been an independent, but I think you just don't want people to be able to put you in a box, Bob.
Yeah, and well, that was part of it, because I would be out on the campus, and they'd say, how can you as a Democrat be against abortion? And then we'd have a conversation. Yeah. And if I was a Republican against abortion, it'd be just, Republican, nothing to talk to you about. So it was. Yeah. It was a conversation piece.
Yeah.
But no more. Now I'm an independent. That does much more accurately convey where I'm coming from.
And, of course, in these 50 years, Democrat and Republican, the concept of those two parties has changed radically. But let me just give a little history. I know the music's going to start pretty soon. We're going to be through our first segment already. But you're familiar with the baby boom. You're a boomer.
I am a baby boomer, yeah.
Yeah. And there are different opinions about what that era is. But basically, when World War II was over, so we'll say 1946, all the men came home from the war, and the women didn't have to work in the factories, and they started getting married and having babies. And that was us. And so from 46 to 64 is the longest you can stretch it, really. Probably more like 60 or 61. But for a decade and a half, at least, there was this boom of children being born. And that was us. We were the baby boom generation.
Yeah, and then when you look at the legacy we left to the college campus,
so many of us became
friends. Now we're just the babies, not the baby boomers. We're just the babies.
Yeah. So I'm part of it, and I am a baby boomer through and through. There's no doubt about that. But prior to this event, this phenomenon, the situation in America, we just finished the war. We went over and saved everybody's tail. And Americanism was high. People were patriotic. The economy was strong. People were building homes for people to have their babies in. And there was jobs and there were cars. And then pretty soon TV sets. And it was just a wonderful time for a few years. Also at that time, spiritually, the condition of the church, there was basically most Americans would say they believe in God. Most of them could tell you where they went to church, or at least where they professed to go to church. A great event happened around the same time. In 1949, a young Baptist preacher, Billy Graham, held revival meetings in circus tents in Los Angeles. A year later, the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association was founded. And that was a significant thing in our culture and in the history of the church, because Billy started taking it outside of the church walls like no one had ever done before. And so evangelism became a reality. Billy Graham, God bless him, there's never been anybody like him, and he's absolutely at the top of my list. Love the guy. But people started having these born-again experiences. Oh, and I hear the music. Oh, no.
We do. And, yeah, Billy Graham was one of the few televangelists that I actually like. Radio evangelists are another whole story, though. Radio evangelists, they're cool. We'll be right back.
Believe it or not, Bob Siegel is aware that there may be one or two people who disagree with his opinions. To offer your own comments on the topic at hand, or to challenge Bob with a thought-provoking question, feel free to contact Bob on Facebook, Twitter, or questions@bobsiegel.net.
When you trust the care of your children to others, it's comforting to know they share the same Christian values, that what you teach your children at home is also taught in their preschool environment. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is an all-inclusive preschool where the staff ministers to all children of all abilities, including children with special needs, through a curriculum developed by the owners and designed for the preschool-aged child 3 to 5. During these preschool years, your children will make important developmental gains, as well as social and emotional development that'll be the foundation for their overall success in life. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool is a state-licensed, Bible-believing, Bible-teaching preschool and a nonprofit 501c3 organization. Contact us now at WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com and secure a space for your preschooler. WisdomWorksChristianPreschool.com or call 619-440-1044. 619-440-1044. Wisdom Works Christian Preschool.
The Answer. This is Bob Siegel with Jim Barrier.
Okay, so picking up, here I am, a baby boomer growing up in the 60s, and I was unchurched. I had never read a Bible, honestly didn't have any idea what the Christmas story or the Easter story really were about, and my mother was not a churchgoer. I was raised by a single mom. My mom, as I grew up, she believed in reincarnation. She was a big fan of Edgar Casey and Gene Dixon. You remember them?
Oh, yeah. They were big.
Yeah, Gene Dixon was 90% right 50% of the time. And do the math.
yeah. And so, well, mom was even 99% right but wrong once fails the biblical definition of a true prophet.
I know. But mom was fascinated with that stuff. And she would try to kind of influenced me, and we got into it one time, more than once, but one time she said, you know, well, reincarnation, it just makes sense. And I said, Mom, it makes no sense. Now, see, I was real strong in math growing up, and I said, it's bad math. The population is growing, and so where do they get the extra souls? They got some holding tank up there somewhere?
Maybe a few newbies get thrown in once in a while.
I guess. And so I didn't buy into the reincarnation thing, but I didn't go to church, so I didn't know any of this stuff. Now, here's where it gets really odd, Bob. I was in the 60s in Southern California, and yet I didn't smoke, I didn't drink, I didn't do drugs, I was a virgin.
You were just a Texas ahead of your time, Jim.
I was an anomaly.
Here in California.
But at the same time, and didn't believe in God because I didn't see any proof of God, I was so smart as a teenager. But somehow, without any church influence and any formal training or catechism, I didn't do any of these bad things, didn't smoke, drink, drugs, you know, women, everything. I also, somehow deep within me, I understood that homosexuality was wrong. I understood that abortion was wrong. It seemed to me communism was definitely wrong. So I had these very conservative views as a teenager. I remember having a debate in civics class, and they got into the thing about abortion, and I was passionate. I mean, I raised my voice, and I got emotional talking about how it was wrong to take this unborn life, and people were looking at me like I was crazy. And it wasn't because of a religious point of view. It was just I knew that there was something wrong about that.
That's because you had a conscience, and the Bible says that even those who haven't read the Bible still have God's word in their conscience.
Well, that should be very scary for some. So that's where I was. The kids that I knew that were Christians or went to church, you know, it was the cheerleaders and the quarterbacks and the popular kids, and I wasn't any of those either. And so here I was, moving on through the 60s, which was a crazy time, and in 1968, now you remember 68, it was one of the most volatile years in the 20th century.
Well, Jim, they say if you remember the 60s, you weren't there.
Well, but I was. That's because I didn't do drugs, so I did remember it. And so we had the JFK assassination, Martin Luther King,
Bobby Kennedy assassination.
Riots. At the Democratic National Convention, there was riots. Drugs were starting to be used, the free love movement, there was just everything was going nuts. The Vietnam War, transcendental meditation had made its way over here thanks to the Beatles, who also made drugs popular. But all of this stuff was going on around me. And it was a crazy time. And in 1968, I had some friends at school that were they were witnessing to me. I didn't know that's what it was called, but they were sharing their faith with me and telling me about Jesus. In fact, one good friend, Don Aldi, he said, "Jim, I'm praying for you." And of course, me being a smart, like I said, "Don, I appreciate that, but don't waste your breath. There's nobody listening." And because I don't believe in God, so why would you pray? But he kept praying. And my other friend, Jim Crosswhite, who's now a professor at the University of Oregon, he started taking me to these meetings now where they were disguised. He couldn't just out and out bring me to church. That was too obvious. But he would bring me to these little small group things at the beach or places and meeting people. And one night we went to this thing, and there was a bunch of long-haired surfer dudes that lived down at the beach, but they were Christians. And so I got into a conversation with this one young man, and he said this to me, and it just disturbed me. I didn't sleep that night. He said, "Jim, if I'm right and you're wrong, I have everything to gain and you have everything to lose. If you're right and I'm wrong, you haven't gained anything and I haven't lost anything." And that bugged the cheese out of me. He had me. Just with a rational concept. And really, it was just a borrowed thing. I know you've read things like that. You know, Albert Camus said, "I'd rather live my life as if there is a God and die to find out there isn't, than to live my life as if there isn't a God and die to find out there is." And same kind of logic.
Right.
It kept me awake that night. And he said this. He said, "I challenge you to pray this prayer. God, and I don't believe you're there, but if you are there, will you reveal the truth of yourself to me?" I said, "Yeah, okay, I can pray that prayer." And I prayed something like that. "God, if you're up there and I don't believe you are, show yourself to me." And within a matter of months, I had turned the corner, had started attending a Bible study, and I went in the summer of 1968 to a youth camp in the San Bernardino Mountains held by Skyline Church, who we'll probably hear about in a few minutes, and one Jimmy Johnson, not the football coach, not the race car driver, but the youth pastor par excellence. Jimmy Johnson baptized me in a swimming pool at a youth camp on August 28th, 1968. And I have that date memorized because wherever I was at in the process, I knew that after I went in that water and came back out, I knew I had set a course. I'd made a decision and never turned back.
Yeah, and there's so many other powerful stories like this of people that were skeptical and God got a hand of them. We'll be right back. Bob Siegel. They say a man's home is his castle. So when it comes to the wiring of your house, you don't want to mess around with some unknown electrician. Instead, do what I did. Call W&S Electric Incorporated. W&S specializes in both contracting and repair. From troubleshooting to remodeling to circuit breakers and fuses, W&S takes a skilled but personal interest in your home at affordable rates. I know the owner, Wayne Klingenhofer, personally, and I can testify firsthand to his integrity. Call 619-447-8785. That's 447-8785 for W&S Electric Incorporated. License number 480-539. W&S Electric.
Not sure when to try an unusual novel? Let the customers speak for themselves. Here is another Amazon customer review for Bob Siegel's latest book, The Dangerous Christmas Ornament. While there is nothing in this book that would stop you from giving it to or reading it to your kids, this book will certainly hold an adult's interest as well. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament has it all. Magic, talking cats, bullies who get their comeuppance, fun dialogue, and a good story. Do not let the title fool you. While Christmas does play a prominent role, this is really not a Christmas story, and it can be read at any time of the year, except February 31st. The Dangerous Christmas Ornament, available on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com.
Pleasure to be joined once a month by my rotating co-host and good friend, Jim Barrier.
Thank you, Bob. So there I was. All of a sudden, there's this change. And, you know, in Paul's letter to the Romans in chapter 6, he talks about baptism being a death and a resurrection. It's a picture of moving away from the old and beginning the new. And that's what happened for me. Now, what I wasn't aware, because the whole church culture was new to me at this point, was that there are routines and traditions and things that just, it's just the way you do it. And so here I am at this camp, and I was a bit of an anomaly even there because I had this long, I had a big afro, I was this goofy-looking guy, and I dressed funny.
Afro, so you mean you were doing cultural appropriation even back then?
Well, I was, and everybody thought I was on drugs because I looked like somebody on drugs, but I didn't do drugs. And I did carry my guitar around everywhere, but I became kind of a celebrity there amongst these kids because they were the church kids with, you know, just straight looking normal, you know, good kids at church. And they started saying at the end of the week at this camp, yeah, well, next week we got to go back to school and everything goes back to normal. And I looked at them, I said, you're out of your mind. You're crazy. I'm not going back to what's normal. This is life changing. This is everything. This is the most important thing that there is. I gave my life to God. How can I go back? And so I didn't. And I went back to school, and my classmates and teachers and people in high school thought that I had flipped out on drugs because I was so passionate about my faith.
Well, you had actually met God, and how can that not transform your life? And that was very bewildering to those around you because they were comparing you with the way you had been before.
Well, and to make things more complicated, and I'll just briefly, my mother had been remarried when I was young, and her name changed. And when I went to live with her and my stepfather, they enrolled me in school, and they enrolled me under her married name, which was Michaels, but they never adopted me and they never changed anything legally. So I went from school from fourth grade to 11th grade as Jim Michaels, who was a non-existent person. And so I became a Christian, a follower of Jesus that summer, and I went into the dean's office before school started and said, told him the story. I said, look, here's my birth certificate. This is my real name, and I want my diploma to have my real name. So they changed my name in school to Jim Barrier, which was my real born given name. So first day at school, you know, you're in class, and they're calling roll, and the teacher says, Jim Barrier. And I raised my hand, and the kid next to me says, what's your name? I said, Jim Barrier. I said, oh, man, you look like a guy that I know named Jim Michaels. I said, oh, I knew Jim Michaels. You did? I said, yeah, he's dead. What? Yes, he died in a swimming pool in San Bernardino. No! So I was a little weird. So it was a complete change of identity. Even my name was changing. And I had a speech class. Every speech, I talked about Jesus. It didn't matter what the assignment was. I found a way to talk about Jesus. I memorized the four spiritual laws. Remember those, Bill Bright?
Oh, yeah, by Campus Crusade.
Yeah, and I gave a speech. I did the whole thing word for word. Just as there are physical laws in the physical universe, so there are spiritual. And I did the whole deal. and gave an altar call in speech class.
Wow.
So they thought I was nuts, and I might have been. I was crazy for Jesus. Well, within about a year, another phenomenon took place in our culture, and we call it now the Jesus movement. Remember the Jesus movement?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It was kind of part of the 60s, early 70s with all those other movements. The Jesus movement came in, too.
Yeah, and I was kind of a harbinger to that. I was the voice crying in the cultural wilderness. And so some great stuff started happening because it was not the traditional thing necessarily. And I was going up to Hollywood. They had Jesus marches, and Hollywood First Presbyterian Church is where the first time I met Larry Norman, and then going up to Calvary Chapel with Chuck Smith, and they had a band called Love Song. And music started changing in the church.
That was when a much more contemporary type of music.
Oh, changed. Man, I'll tell you. And it
only took us 2,000 years. So.
Oh, but there were people that were upset. No, we sing the hymns. No, you don't use drums and electric guitars.
Yeah, they were calling it the devil's music. Little did they know that in the 1700s, the Wesleys took a lot of music right out of the bar rooms and converted the lyrics. So,
well, and there's so many stories like that. And in fact, they said that the first time somebody brought an organ in and played it in the church, they called it the devil's box. So I'm on to the music thing. So anyway, this movement started happening, and it was a very exciting time. And we had the Hollywood Free Paper that Dwayne Peterson put out, and it was kind of it was the Christian response to the L.A. Free Press. An underground paper, if you will. You had the whole Calvary Chapel movement and Maranatha thing going on. Jack Sparks started World Liberation Front, which was up in the Bay Area, up in Berkeley and stuff, but it was a Christian front. And then we started getting some great voices like Josh McDowell and Francis Schaeffer, Walter Martin, and of course they brought in C.S. Lewis, who had already been around for a while, but his stuff started becoming popular, and InterVarsity Press started getting some of this literature out that was creative and presenting the gospel.
Yeah, they were a notch or two above the other ones. They were certainly better than Chick publications.
I hated those. I always hated them. There's bad
and God animation. God could still use them, but they were kind of tacky.
I didn't like them too much, it was a great movement that was going on, and then things started kind of getting weird, because you had all the 60s things, you had the hippie residue, and a lot of the Jesus movement were people who had formerly done drugs and been involved in all of this stuff, and occult stuff, and now they're following Jesus, and there were baptisms down at the beach, and celebrities started professing faith, and for a while it was kind of cool. In fact, there was an article, a cover story on Time magazine, and it was about the Jesus people, and which was funny because about a year before that, Time magazine had a cover story that said God is dead, and what they always find out when they think Jesus is dead, you can't keep a good man down. So,
yeah. And, of course, that was Friedrich Nietzsche that came up with that God is dead.
Yeah.
Newsflash,
yeah.
Nietzsche is dead. We'll be right back. This is Bob Siegel for Skyline Church. Looking for a place where you can be yourself without having to act more spiritual than you really are? Looking for a church where you can have the dynamics of a large worship service, but the intimacy of a small group? Why not try Skyline Church, located in Rancho San Diego by 94 in Hamasha? I know you'll enjoy the preaching of nationally famous speaker Pastor Jim Garlow. You can also get to know people through a midweek small group. And for those who want to dig deeper into the Bible, a whole series of classes are offered on Sunday mornings. I teach one of them myself, Forbidden Table Talk, same name as my column, a time to bring up any Bible-related question at all. I would love to see you there. Now, I'm not saying Skyline doesn't have other good classes that you could take as an alternative to mine. I'm just saying, don't take any of those. Take Forbidden Table Talk. Actually, you'll enjoy any experience you choose at Skyline Church. Skyline Church, Sunday morning services at 8:30 a.m. and 10:30 a.m. Jim Barrier is joining to me today, and he's celebrating his birthday, but not the physical birthday, his spiritual birthday, 50 years of being a born-again Christian. Yes, he's one of those.
I'm one of those, and you mentioned Skyline Church. I will ever be grateful for the ministry of Skyline Church and the fine people that I knew when I was there, and they brought me in to a knowledge, a personal knowledge of Jesus Christ as a real person and as my Lord and Savior. And I am so thankful for the ministries that have gone on and have gone through several pastors, and they've all been good men. They have several Sunday school teachers. We know which class to take, right, folks? Forbidden Table Talk.
Well, of course, that just goes without saying, even though we say it every week.
Yeah, we have to. So now that the Jesus movement was in full swing, and there was, man, as Larry Norman said, underground Christians are springing up out of the dirt, and they were everywhere. And it became kind of a problem for some of the churches, so they had to decide if they're going to let all these long-haired, funny-looking people that don't dress in their Sunday best.
Yeah, just the kind of people Jesus would have been hanging around
well,
with.
Exactly. But it really started taking shape, and to a large degree, some of the churches that boomed were the ones that embraced these kids and said, come on in, we're going to figure out our differences, but we're worshiping God. And so that was a great time. Now, during this time, I moved into a house with a bunch of other Christian young men, and we kind of lived on faith is what they said. I had a job, actually. The rest of them didn't, but they were living on faith. And I said, I'm living on faith, too. It takes faith for me to work this job. But we had Bible studies, and really what I realized looking back, it was a house church is really what it was. And during that time, I'd really been seeking. I wanted to know what it meant to be a disciple. And I found a book laying on the coffee table one day, and it was called True Discipleship. It was by one William McDonald, probably out of print now. But
right, he was the president of InterVarsity at one time.
It focused on some of the passages where Jesus said, take up your cross and follow me, and let the dead bury the dead, and those kinds of things. And it was an urgency to follow Jesus and forsake everything. And I took it literally. And so I said goodbye to everybody, said, I've got to go. I gave away everything I owned, which was my guitar and my record collection. I didn't really own much. And I got a good Bible and a toothbrush and $20 to put in my pocket because they told me you'd be arrested for vagrancy if you didn't have some money. And I started hitchhiking across America to preach the gospel.
Wow, now that sounds like a fun adventure.
At 18 years of age, folks, I don't recommend this. If there are any young people listening, do not do that.
Kids, don't try this at home.
But I did that. It was a great adventure, and man, there were some great stories, and led some people to Christ, and learned a lot. And at a certain point, felt I had the permission, the freedom in my own ability to try to figure out what God wanted in my life, that I could go back to San Diego. And so I did. I caught a ride, hitchhiked back to San Diego, made it all the way to the East Coast, and went all over the country.
How did you make ends meet on that trip? I know you took a little money. Did you work a few odd jobs along the way?
Not allowed to use it. Yeah, work jobs. There was a great story. Oh, man, it'd take too long, but I worked in a carnival. I did all kinds of things. And here's the cool thing. That whole time, a couple of months or whatever, never went without a meal, always got rides, and only slept outside two times, and that was because the people who would pick me up were sleeping outside, and they had an extra sleeping bag. And so it was just an amazing thing. It really taught me how to live by faith. And so after that, it's been a piece of cake. So came back from that time, and then a new movement was starting to happen, and we call it the Charismatic Renewal. Now, I think it started in the Catholic Church, really, but churches were starting to have these visitations and signs and wonders, and Pentecostalism started kind of creeping out of its boundaries and getting into some of the other churches. And I kind of got involved in all of that. And had moved from Skyline Church because one of the fellows that was in my speech class that I'd grown up with, one Charlie Gregg, his dad was a pastor of a local church, Faith Chapel, an Assembly of God church. And when I got back, somebody said, "Charlie's looking for you." I said, "Really?" And I went and found Charlie. Charlie had given his life to Christ. Now, he was a preacher's kid, but he was wild. Charlie, and if there may be listeners in San Diego that know my friend Charlie, because he's still around, but when we were growing up, Charlie was he was a wild one. If there was a fight, Charlie was in the middle of it. If there was a dance, Charlie was in the middle of the dance floor. He was just wild and crazy, and he was always getting in trouble. And I got back there and found out that Charlie had surrendered his life to Christ, and we had a reunion. Boy, we had a good time, and I started going over. We had a coffee house. Remember the days of the coffee house? And I'd bring my guitar over, and I'd sing, and Charlie would preach. We had this awakening, and a whole bunch of the kids from our, you know, classmates from high school and people in the area, Lemon Grove, Spring Valley, La Mesa area, kids started getting saved. And it was a marvelous time. And during that time, Charlie introduced me to a young preacher none of us had really heard of, a fellow named Winky Pratty. I know you know Winky.
Oh, no, yeah, I do know Winky. He's quite a guy.
And I was just completely overwhelmed by this guy. He was funny, he was smart, and he had a New Zealand accent. And
yeah, he was not your typical preacher.
He was great.
I used to think preachers rehearsed their Southern accents, but Winky.
This guy was amazing, and Winky had a huge impact on me. And because of Winky's influence, I started reading about people like Charles Finney.
Yes, he was a big Charles Finney fan.
Oh, he was. And D.L. Moody, and I started reading books by A.W. Tozer and Leonard Ravenhill.
Oh, I love Tozer. Tozer's fantastic.
Hardcore stuff. Yeah. But that started impacting me again. Now, there was this thing of, you know, not just a profession of faith, not just going to church, because when I became a believer, I was at church every time the doors were open, man. I wanted to be there. I wanted to be around God's people. I wanted to find out. I wanted to learn. I was hungry. And now I started reading about these revivals and these radical people through history who even challenged the church. In fact, many of them were rejected by the church because they were so radical. We'll come back, folks.
Yeah, hold that thought. We'll be back for one more segment. This is Bob Siegel. I've been on the radio for many years, but let me tell you about a voice I've learned to appreciate far more than any radio announcers, Fred Falduti of Realty Executives All Area. Now, why do I care so much about Fred's voice? Because not long ago, Fred's voice spoke the following words to me.
Bob, I have some good news for you. They accepted your offer.
That's right. Fred Falduti just sold my house. With words like those, who needs radio? Folks, I'm telling you, choosing the right realtor is no small task. Fred took a personal interest in my situation, treating me less like a customer and more like a member of the family. And Fred's been doing this since 1994. Realty Executives All Area has sold thousands of homes locally.
Our footprints are throughout San Diego County, and we are proud of our accomplishments of assisting home sellers and buyers like you. Over the years, we've managed hundreds of real estate transactions and have encountered just about every kind of challenging situation possible.
That's it, folks. That's the voice that will sell your home. Whether buying or selling, the man you want is Fred Felduti with Realty Executives All Area. 619-719-7717. That's 619-719-7717 or fredfelduti.com. We radio hosts love to talk, but let's face it, when have we ever sold your home? Fred Felduti will.
Check out this reader's comment about Bob Siegel's book, I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, but Mr. Siegel's book was like no other I've ever read on the subject. He does not attack the skeptic for his views. He respects the belief of his readers. I highly recommend this book to anyone who's ever had questions or confusion about Christianity. And here's another reader's comment. I come from a Muslim, atheist background, but it still carried weight with me. I normally pass books on to friends when done reading them. This one, I'm holding on to for a while. I'd Like to Believe in Jesus, but available on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Jim, it's been a lot of fun listening to your testimony and looking forward to hearing as much more as you can get through before we finish up our last segment.
We're gonna squeeze some stuff in. Now, after the charismatic renewal, a couple of events happened within the church culture, and I'm not sure that they were really great personally, but they were fad. There were movements that went through. One of them is what we called the shepherding movement. You remember that? And there was like this hierarchy. There was this real strict spiritual authority discipline thing, and you didn't do anything unless your leader told you.
Yeah, and unfortunately, that kind of idea gave birth to some pretty wacky cults, I think.
It did, but that happened, and I brushed shoulders with that, but just something didn't seem right. But there was a lot of that stuff going on, and that was kind of scary, and I had friends that fell into those things. And then along came... it really wasn't new, but it gained popularity. It was new in being a fad within the church. And you and I would call it the prosperity gospel.
A very dangerous teaching.
Well, and dangerous because here's what happened. That opened the door to a me-centered gospel.
Yeah, it was as if God was a genie in the bottle that was just there to make you healthy and wealthy. And yeah, I do think God wants us to be healthy, but
I do
wealthy, I mean,
well, and people
that would be nice,
verse,
but that's not the way life works.
They use one verse out of 3 John that says, I would that you would prosper and be in health. And they say, so there it is right there. God wants you to prosper and be in health. And I say, you know, context, context, context. That's John speaking to a friend. And if you're going to say that any time someone who writes in the Bible makes a quote, and that's God's will for you, then you need to go over there and look where Paul says, I wish they would all emasculate themselves.
Plus, you can prosper without becoming wealthy, too. The word prosper does not necessarily translate into
it. But my
and again, if someone becomes wealthy as a Christian, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. But,
but my point was that it was John talking to Gaius, a friend of his. It wasn't a mandate. That
we're reading other people's mail in the New Testament.
Yeah. And that opened the door to this whole thing that I think now is rampant in the church. And it's what I want, what makes me feel good. I don't want to make anybody uncomfortable. So we're gonna present this gospel that will grant everybody's wishes, and you can live however you want. And what's happened is the thing has snowballed to a point now where we've talked about this a bit. I think last month we coined the term lower criticism.
Right, as opposed to the higher criticism.
And so now I have preacher friends who are saying Jesus didn't talk about sin. We did a whole show on this, and that there's no hell. God wouldn't tell anybody hell. And all of this stuff I think was the natural evolution of making man the center rather than God the center. So now we're paying the price for it, as well as culturally. You know, that baby boom generation that was all anti-establishment, and we're radical revolutionary, going to change the world. Now it's again, it's imploded, and it's, don't offend me, don't offend anybody, and there's no right and wrong unless you disagree with me, and it's wrong for you to disagree with me, so, and it's wrong for you to say that there's a wrong, and the whole
thing, and it's absolutely true that there's no such thing as truth, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. I've had friends say that. I had a friend, she said, I don't believe anything is absolute. I said, do you believe that? And she said, absolutely, and I laughed my head off. Yeah. And then my neighbor recently said, I don't believe anything's absolute. And I said, you realize that's an absolute statement.
Yeah, the other great one is, it's wrong to judge. And, well, yeah. You just made a judgment. You just called
exactly.
something wrong.
But that's where we're at now. There's so much of that stuff. Now, I just wanted to cap off, because I know we're going to run out of time here. So those are the battles we're fighting now within the church. That people don't even have a sense of what's absolute or true or right. It's all open to what you feel good about.
Yeah, and hearing you review this, going back to the 70s, you really get a sense of how much has changed.
Yeah, and so I think that church culture has paralleled the social culture and pop culture, and most of it hasn't been good in the last 20 years. Now, here's something good that did happen. Several years ago, I was offered a position at a church here in San Antonio, and I pulled up roots, left San Diego, beautiful, beautiful San Diego, and came to Texas, and wound up meeting one Gary Young. And we're something. When the three of us get together, folks, it's hilarious. And Gary and I became friends, and then Gary and I had a radio show, which was called Resistance Radio, and that's when I got introduced to one Bob Siegel, and the rest is history, folks. And we've kind of had this crusade of trying to get people to think. I said that to my wife today. I said something, and a person after church said, you know, that made sense. It never made sense to me before, but when you say it, it makes sense. And I said, that's my mission in life, to get people to think. Not only what do you believe, but why do you believe what you believe?
And yeah, so, and that's all we're trying to do with the gospel for you skeptics out there. We respect your skepticism, and we're not here to shove something down your throat. But just think about it in a new way, because we're often of the opinion that religion doesn't have to make any sense, that we have to check our brains at the door before we can become religious. And that's not true. God has given us a conscience. God has given us historical and archaeological evidence for the Bible. There are all kinds of breadcrumbs, this trail there that are. God has left for you to follow.
You know, if I can do this and not get in trouble, the truth is out there. Okay.
Well, that's hate speech, Jim. Truth.
The cross files. So, the parallel in pop culture, I've watched this because I am a baby boomer. I've watched this happen to my country, my generation, and this is the tragedy. The baby boomers, of which I am one, became the professors in college, the priests in the church, and the politicians. And we're reaping what we've sown now.
Yeah, we are the descendants of the World War II, which is considered the greatest generation, and we were like the opposite.
We're the narcissist generation.
Maybe that's because we're the generation that grew up on television, or the first ones.
But I had some. I'm gonna close with this last story if I can squeeze it in. Yesterday, I gained hope. It was like a Star Wars thing, a new hope. I took some of the youth from our church to SeaWorld. That doesn't seem like a real spiritual thing.
Do they have a SeaWorld in Texas?
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's
I knew they had them around the country. I was not aware that Texas was one of them, though.
Oh, we've got one right here. And I spent the day with these kids, teenagers. Well, one of them is a young adult. But they were these kids, and these are the most wonderful kids. And I gained so much hope for the future hanging out with these kids, and I told them, you guys are going to change the world.
Well, and I am starting to see some millennials on Fox News that are giving me some hope. But boy, I don't envy what they go through in the college campus. You and I spoke out as college students, Jim, and we were treated with some verbal hostility, but it was nothing like what today's millennials have to go through.
They'll do it.
All right, my friend. Well, congratulations on your 50th birthday. It is awesome.
Thank
and you.
You
have certainly been a great witness to, I think when people meet you, it does break the mold. You give them a much better version of Christianity than what they may have thought. Okay, my friend, God bless you. We'll see you next week.
Siegel Show on AM 1170. The Answer is sponsored by Bob Siegel.